Well, I get the opportunity to jump straight into, I think, week three of our current series. But before we get into that, just let me introduce to you my fam, my clan from back home. So here's a picture of them. This is my wife, Emma, and our three boys, Joash, Isaac, and Solomon. Our youngest now actually just was 18 this weekend, and I'm like feeling as old as ever. But the bottom line is, really, as a family, we are all just church planters. Jamie's absolutely right. We literally bet the farm and we walked away from our jobs and our careers. I'd done 11 years in the police, and we decided that we were going to try and plant and really do the same thing that you guys are doing here, which is build a life-giving and thriving church. And we did that a little over 12 years ago now, and we're thankful to God for all that he's done through the life of Liverpool One Church. But I'm just super grateful that I get to do it with good friends and good mates like your pastor, because it really does make the journey easy. Because I don't know about you, but I just don't like tension. And I'm not sure about you, but sometimes there can be tension, even in the church, sometimes a little bit of tension. Even at home, there can be tension. Now, I don't want to dob my wife in, but there was a conversation a couple of months ago that caused a little bit of tension. And in fact, it was one of those conversations, and because I'm a pastor, I'm a preacher, I'm always on the lookout for material that I can use in a message. I literally engaged in a conversation, and it was that good that I decided right there and then, in that moment, that I was going to type the entire conversation out on that phone so I could share it with you here at Lighthouse. So, as I jumped to my notes, this was the conversation. I'd come in from work and I asked Emma one question. She was watching TV, she was watching Netflix. She was watching a program that was actually based around an Irish diver, and it was all about free diving, so where they dive to the bottom of the ocean without using an oxygen tank and they see how far down they can go. So my question to my wife was this: how long can he, meaning the man on the TV, how long can he hold his breath for? I'm not entirely sure about what I was expecting, but typically I was probably hoping for some kind of a metric in there. But this was the answer that Emma gave to me. She said, well, he's Irish and he's met someone that's Italian and it hasn't shown us yet, but I think they might end up as a couple, and they are both pretty incredible because they swim like dolphins, because their feet are held together in these kind of flippers, and when they go down, they have to hold the ropes so they know where they are because it's so dark down there. It's actually quite a progressive series and it's following their lives. In fact, it's based in Egypt and I think they're going for some kind of world record. I think about two statues of liberties deep, and I think, but I really don't know, because how would they be doing it? Because my ears would be popping. And I'm sat there and I'm thinking, like, I only wanted to know, like, how long can the boy hold his breath? Like, that was all I was looking for, and yet that was the answer that I was given. You know, and I think about that conversation, and in many ways, it's similar to a lot of our conversations, which is sometimes in conversation, it's kind of easy to just miss the point. It's easy to take somebody the wrong way or go off piste or go off track. It happens to every single one of us, and oftentimes, it can even happen daily. But it's not just in our conversations that we can sometimes go off point. For some of us, we know exactly what it's like to go off point, off piste, off track, even with our lives. I mean, for some of us, maybe even gathered in one of our locations today, you're going to know and resonate what this feels like, because you feel right now like your life has somehow just gone off point and you've kind of started to miss the point of what you thought your life would all be about. And it creates this tension and a conflict within you, because for some of you on one end of the pendulum, like, on paper, your life is going great. On paper, you shouldn't feel like that at all. Why? Because when it came to education, you got the grades. When it came to the employment that you went for, you got the job. When it came to the promotion that you were looking for, you got the role. Like, financially, you've held things together. You've been doing things incredibly well. You've got the house, you've got the car, you've got the garden, you've got the 2.4 family thing going on, and life is going great for you, and yet you still feel frustrated because in the depth of your soul, there is an emptiness that makes you ask the question, what is the point? Am I missing the point of the reason why I'm even here? And all of these things that you've been searching for and you've been pursuing with all of your heart that were supposed to bring you a deep-rooted sense of satisfaction, in fact, has not at all. And now the question remains, like, why am I even here? What is the point of my entire existence? Like, you've got the gadgets, you've got the TV, you've got the best garden furniture. Like, on every level, on paper, you shouldn't have that gap within the depth of your soul. But you know it's true because you're the one living in you. And you feel like, well, what's the point for me? Is this the only reason why I'm here? Just to live, sleep, and eat, and just recycle again and again? Is there nothing else going on for me? But then what's equally true is that you could experience exactly the same feeling or sentiment, but being at the opposite end of the pendulum. Like for you, you wrestle with the struggle of, well, education didn't go well for you and you didn't get the grades. And the reality of it is you're probably never going to get the grades. And now you're never going to get the grades. It means that you're limited in terms of the job opportunities that you were hoping for, that you were dreaming for. And for you, it creates this inner struggle and sense of frustration. And not only do you have that going on, but now because you can't get the job that you dreamt of, well, now you're worried and concerned that it's going to affect you massively financially, because we all know that those things are just tied together. In the home life, it can feel frustrated too. Maybe you've not met the right person. Maybe you've been in a relationship that's just gone a little bit wrong, and it wasn't your fault, it wasn't her fault, but it's just how it's ended up. And now it just leaves you feeling with this same sentiment of, well, what's the point? Like, is there even a better purpose for my life? Like, what's the reason for my existence? And the problem for me, when you start to ask a question like that, like, what's the point, is then you start to ask a deeper question. Then you start to wonder and say, well, does my life count for anything? Is there a purpose for my life at all? Like, at the end of my life, will anything that I've done be counted for anything at all? I'm one of these people that's kind of fixed to my mobile phones, and I'm fascinated by the news. It doesn't matter whether it's the Times, whether it's the BBC, whether it's Sky News or whatever. Like, I've got the alerts that come through to my phone. And recently, because I'm a bit of a newsaholic, I was absolutely fixated with the story around the Titan submersible. I'm sure that many of you were following that entire story too, which was all about like this, I guess now we know it to be a bit of a mediocre submarine, but actually at the time we did not. But it was taking passengers, taking tourists down to the depth of the ocean with the view of, let us show you what the Titanic is like. But unfortunately, someone somewhere along the way really lost the point and lost the purpose of what their true existence was all about. Because the Titan submersible, even though it was impressive for a while, it becomes apparent to us now that somebody was pursuing profits over safety more than any other thing. And now we know and hear about the disaster that took place, and people ended up losing their lives, which is ironic because they ended up going to visit the very site where over 1,500 people lost their lives. And of course, I'm talking now about the sinking of the Titanic. I don't know about you, but I do like a little bit of history every now and then. And the Titanic is probably better known to you and I because of James Cameron's movie, which actually, check this, it's still in the top four movies of all time now, having grossed in excess of $4 billion. Like, I mean, that movie was a classic, right? And there's so much going on in that film, but there's actually a sub-story that's running in the movie that's actually underneath the essence of Rose and Jack's romantic relationship. And actually, speaking about Rose and Jack, I have one question for you all, and that is simply this. Why didn't Jack climb on this door right here? Because if he'd have climbed on that, there would have been no problem at all. Surely we can all see there was plenty of room for him. But the story of the Titanic actually is around a ship, and many of you will know it, where on the 15th of August in 1912, at 20 past two, the ship sank to the very bottom of the ocean, and over 1,500 people lost their lives. 700 of them were crew, Another 700 of them were people who were traveling on a third class ticket. And then there were in excess of 100 people that lost their life. And I guess that you could say from an engineering perspective, this is one of the worst feats of somebody missing the point. I mean, somebody completely missed the point. How and why? Well, again, they were pursuing style over safety. They were pursuing the wrong thing when they went about creating this boat. I mean, the reality of it is, and this is interesting, there were even squash courts, Turkish baths, gymnasiums, and even unique crockery that was created for the build of this ship. And yet somebody, while they were focusing on everything that was going to be intended to be so stylish, they were omitting to take care of that which they should have been the most, which is individual safety, because what they actually did was they recognized that having 32 lifeboats on the Titanic, they felt was going to be enough, but then they thought that aesthetically, it just didn't fit with the ship. It just wasn't in keeping with the ship. So what did they do? They made a decision to simply reduce it from 32 lifeboats to 20 lifeboats. Why? Because they didn't like the look of it. They thought and felt that it looked too cluttered. What did they do? Well, they just missed the point. What we were missing was one bold person to stand up and say, guys, this isn't right. We're putting all of our energy over here and we're omitting looking at what is most important. Yeah. But you know, exactly the same thing happens in our faith life too. We omit that which is most important. And even as a follower of Jesus. And if you're a Christian and you're in any one of our locations today, man, I am so glad that you are here in church today. But can I just say this to you? If maybe this is your first ever Sunday at Lighthouse Church, like maybe you're only here today because someone dragged you along and promised you that they would take you for a dinner afterwards and even pay the bill. And that's the only right reason why you're in church. Can I just say, man, I am so glad you've made a decision to come to Lighthouse today, because we are building and creating this environment for people who maybe are just like you, because we were all you once, and I am so glad that you're here. But for those of you that are followers of Jesus, we miss the point all of the time. In fact, we just get it wrong. We go off piste, we go off track, and there are so many ways in Scripture that we do this. I'm going to rapid fire through a few of them. The first thing that we do and we say, and I understand why, because information is so widely available to us today, and that's because we now think that these slogans that we say sound right and they sound cool, but actually they're completely not scriptural at all. So for example, we say, just follow your heart. Has anybody ever said that? Anybody ever heard that? You just need to follow your heart. Jesus didn't say that at all. Jesus never once said, follow your heart. Jesus said, come and follow me in the book of Matthew. And in fact, Jesus would have known what one of the major prophets in Jeremiah would have said in Jeremiah 17 when he was talking about the heart. He was saying, look, whatever you do, don't trust your heart, because in Jeremiah 17 verse 9, he acknowledged it and said, don't follow your heart because your heart is deceiving you. It tells you fibs and no man can understand it. Whatever you do, don't follow your heart. Another phrase that maybe you've heard where sometimes we can miss the point in our Christian faith is this statement of, you just need to be true to yourself. But again, Jesus didn't say that at all. Jesus said in Matthew 16, he said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me. In other words, he was saying, guys, you can be my follower, but following me is not going to be easy. It is not the keys to a perfectly planned out, mapped out life. That's just not what being a follower of Jesus is. It's never been about that. Sometimes we miss the point when we say, well, just believe in yourself. Anybody ever said that? Anybody ever thought that? Just believe in you. Jesus didn't say that at all. He said in John 14, verse 6, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one gets to the Father except through me. He was saying, don't believe in you. You should believe in me. You should put your faith and your fellowship and your trust in me. Sometimes we say another statement, just do whatever makes you happy, right? Anybody ever done that? Believe that? Don't we all want to believe that? But again, actually, when we do believe that, we're completely missing the point. Because even Jesus says in Mark, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? And there are many ways where in our Christian faith, we know exactly what it's like to just miss the point. But what if the answer to that question of what's the point to my life? What if the answer to that question of is there a purpose to my life? What if there was an answer that was easily accessible for every single one of us? Like, what if there was an answer that had been pre-prepared even before the very foundations of the earth were laid, knowing that there would come a time and a season on St. Patrick's Day here in Dublin, in Navan, in Dundalk, where maybe you would be asking this question about your own life. What's my point? What's my purpose? What's the reason for my existence? What part can I play even being in a local church like that of Lighthouse? What if you're asking that question today and God has already spoken an answer through his son Jesus that gives us immense clarity on this issue? What if there's a question that we've been asking for a long time, and yet God's already prepared an answer, and maybe today, through his word, as we explore together the scriptures, he would just want to illuminate that answer to your life and that of mine. Because to that question, why am I here? Why do I exist? What's the point of my life? What is my purpose? Even Jesus gave immense clarity for every single one of us. In Matthew 5, taken out of the Message translation, when he says this, let me tell you why you are here. And I want you to just remember at the moment right now, he's almost given us so much clarity to a question that many of us at times have struggled with. But he's letting us know, I'm going to bring clarity to something that's maybe in the past being confusing. I'm going to let you understand exactly what the point of your life is. I'm going to help you see the purpose for your existence. Let me tell you why you are here. And he goes on and he says, you're here. You are here. So now he's being very directional in his form. So we're not talking about, let me tell you why your parents are here. Let me tell you why the person that sat next to you is here. Now we're talking in a direct form. Let me drop some seed into the depth of your soul today that's going to bring illumination to a question that has felt so dark for a long time. Let me tell you why you are here. And he goes on, you're here to be salt seasoning. I don't know about you, but sometimes when you think about salt, you've got to ask yourself the question, well, what is its purpose? Many of us will know and be aware that salt preserves things. Salt also has an incredible ability to make even a bad dish taste almost good. Like any of you husbands, no, whatever you do, don't answer that, okay? Husbands, do not look at your wives at all. But you know it's true. You can make even a bad dish kind of taste okay with some salt on it. And here Jesus is saying, look, this is exactly what you're called to do as well. He's saying, guys, listen to me. If you're a follower of Jesus, it's not just about singing and clapping and dancing and rejoicing together, although that is incredible. And man, I love the band here at Dublin. But it's not only about that. There is a reason, there is a purpose why you're here. And the reason is for you to be salt so that you almost, when you enter into a place, it's going to taste better because your presence is in that space. But then he goes on, yeah, that's the reason why you're here. When you go to work, you change the environment and the atmosphere because it's possible you're called to be salt seasoning. But he goes on and he says that brings out the God flavors of the earth. He was saying, look, this is what this looks like to you.
It means that when you turn up at the office and somebody else is being a little bit awkward and harsh and unkind and cruel to somebody around the office table, you're the one that brings the grace and the kindness because there's salt seasoning in the office. When there's salt seasoning in the marriage, it means that there's a little bit more understanding and grace and forgiveness. When there's salt seasoning in the business, it means that there's an integrity that you wouldn't otherwise be experiencing, and there's an authenticity around the table. When there's a little bit more grace in the family home, it just means that there's a little bit more, I'll try and understand you as you try and understand me. When there's a little bit more salt seasoning around the boardroom table, there's just wisdom that's just wrapped in integrity. But he goes on and he says this: if you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. In other words, he's saying, if you're a follower of mine, and if you miss the point, and if you go off track, and if you go off piece, then omit the very reason why God has purposed your existence, then you're missing out on the entire reason why God has placed oxygen in your lungs to exist. Today, he's saying you've got a part to play. God's saying, look, even as we build church together, we've all got a part to play. But the scripture goes on and he says, here's another way for me to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. Now, it's light that is the one thing that enables us to perceive the world around us. And when the scripture is teaching us here that you're here not only to be salt, but light as well, it means that you're here to almost bring out people's ability to perceive God in the world. You're the one, when you're in the room, when you're in the place, when you're in the space, that you enable others to perceive God through you being in that area, through your actions, through your words, not just salt, but also to be light. When you think also about what light does and how through light heat is generated, especially from the sun, and how we all like that typical Dublin weather of constant 30 degrees or not, as it is today. But you know that temperature that you love to be in and around. And actually, when Jesus is saying that you're called not only to be salt and light, but actually you're called to make the climate just a little bit more tolerable for the people who exist in your world. Let's go back to our movie very briefly. So we've been talking about the ship, and we've been talking about the Titanic, and how really it is just one of the biggest failures of engineering that the world has seen, and especially the way in which they just seem to go off point. But there's one part in that movie that's really heartbreaking to see. And again, there's a little bit of fictional license in here because we don't know exactly how everything panned out on that night in 1912. But what we do know is over 1,500 people, all lost their lives. But there is this one really short clip in the movie that literally, as the ship has just broken in two and starts to sink to the very base of the floor of the ocean, it shows us in the movie how those that were able to get in one of those very limited number lifeboats started to sail off, and they could hear the screams, the shouts, the pain, and the anguish that everybody else that was not within the safety of the confinement of those lifeboats. And it kind of reenacts exactly how it must have been playing out. Check out this short clip.
You don't understand. If we go back, they'll swamp the boat. They'll pull us right down, I'm telling you.
Knock it off. You're scaring me. Come on, girls. Grab an oar, let's go.
Are you out of your mind? We're in the middle of the North Atlantic. Now, do you people want to live or do you want to die?
I don't understand a one of you. What's the matter with you? It's your men out there. There's plenty of room for more.
And it's that short statement that was made by a lady called Peggy May, that there is plenty of room for more, that I just want to talk to you about as we start to think about wrapping things up. It's that idea that she was wanting to go back and help those that were drowning, and yet there were still many in the boat that chose not to go back. And it created tension, it created arguments, it created difficulties, and there were complexities. And there was this huge failing that happened in that movie surrounding that sinking of that ship, where those that were saved forgot that it was their responsibility to go back and help those that were drowning. It was those that were already saved and safe and warm within the safety and the confinement of the lifeboats that omitted their responsibility and said, we've clearly forgotten that actually as humanity, as human beings, that this was our responsibility to go back. Because the truth is, could you imagine the stories that could have been told? Like, they didn't go back, and it's heartbreaking, and 1,500 people lost their lives. But could you imagine, and just think for a moment, imagine the stories that they could have come back telling. They could have come back and been welcomed as heroes as they gave these stories about how there was only room for 50 in a lifeboat, but we just took on so many more. And we just made room and we made space. And we had people sat on our knee and on their knee and on shoulders. And even our lifeboat was almost sinking, but it did not. And as a result of our bravery and our boldness and our courageousness, more people were saved. Could you imagine if that was the story that was told? But that wasn't the story that was told. The story that was told was one where they did not go back for more. The story that is told is one that's really, I guess you could say, it's one of cowardice. It was one of being selfish. There was no one bold enough in the boat to stand up and say, let's do the right thing. Let us not miss the point. Let us make sure that we're constantly aware of the reason why we're here. If we're saved and in the boat, we can go and help others that are drowning. My wife and I, Emma, we are church planters. And I guess some people ask us to talk about church. And sometimes they'll say, like, how did you make church grow? And honestly, there's so much to that question that I'm not able to answer, because I think only by God's grace. But I think the one thing that we've always tried to do in our church at Liverpool One is create a very healthy, inviting to church culture. We say it like this: we want to change lives for Christ one life at a time, and we're going to do it by making it easy for people to follow Christ. We want to create this environment on a Sunday, like we're doing here at Lighthouse today in all of the locations, so that you can bring and invite people to church. But I guess that sometimes it's kind of easy for a pastor, you know, from a 40-minute flight away to come here and just tell you that. So rather than me just try and tell you and convince you with my words of the real reason why I'm wanting you now more than ever to be bold, is because I want to show you through a short video of what's on the other end of your asking and your inviting of someone in your world to be a part of this very thing that you're building called church, as together we check out Lisa's story.
My first memory is at home with my family. We were in Two Pleasants. My dad suffered from alcoholism. Therefore, my mum then suffered with mental health. My mum and dad sort of like lost the ability to give us good guidance and direction. But I know that I wanted that. I craved the goodness of life. Just didn't know where to find it. I carried on with my search for this better way of life. So I engaged in the local community, like dancing, youth clubs. And I was just trying to get a bit of stability. Trying so hard. I was attracted to another way of life, got introduced to cannabis at an early age. Thought, okay, let's just see what this is about, see if my place is here with cannabis and with these type of people. But again, it progressed. So my first year of being a mum, I enjoyed it. Second year, still young, drinking, taking drugs, cocaine, and that got better of me. I was addicted to heroin and crack cocaine and methadone. Biggest mistake of my life, not realising that it was slowly stripping me away from life. The drugs had so much power over me. I was just existing, wasn't living. So lost. I thought it was another baby, because I could fix that. It did the job for a few weeks. The drugs were still there. I give up. I did, I give up. So I lived as an addict for 7 years. Nearly ended up in prison. As a result of the crime, my kids were taken off me under an SGO order. They were fostered into care. And I was left on my own. And my mum suggested and invited me to come to Liverpool One Church. So I did, I came along. Wow. I didn't know there was a way to live, like a Christian life, to worship God for the goodness that he's done and what he's capable of. I was told I'd never get my kids back. 2 years clean after putting a lot of effort in. I got them back. My two youngest are in the church. They come to Powerhouse every Sunday and they love it. Powerhouse is amazing. I'm confident for my children to be raised in this church, because when I was a small girl, I would have loved to have come to Liverpool One Church. For me to go to Powerhouse at a young age, jumping around the way I see the kids do now, I'd have loved that, really would. I've just been thinking about how connected my two youngest are with God already. They know him. I was baptised this year. It was early on this year. God has transformed my life. He's turned it upside down. And he's not stopping. I'm so hopeful for my future and my children's future and my children's children's future. I believe we've been blessed to have found this church. I just like the way I'm living, yeah. Everything seems so much clearer and brighter. I can be more happier, yeah. I'm so grateful to Liverpool One Church.
Honestly, like, I've seen that video so many times. And the reality of it is that story just represents every one of our story, but maybe in a different way. And maybe what you don't know is that girl, Lisa, she serves almost every single week in our church, and her kids are there every week, like she said, but it only happened because one person, it didn't need hundreds, it just needed one person to invite her mum to church, and then her mum, as one person, just one person, was bold enough to take a risk and take a chance and ask her, at the time, drug addict daughter who'd had her kids taken off her by the social services, to just come to church. And my ask of you is, I don't want us to build a church in Liverpool, but I don't want you to build a church here in Dublin, Navan or Dundalk either, where sometimes we can kind of miss the point of the real reason why we're here, because you and I together are called to be salt and light. And what that means and what that looks like is we are bold and we are brave and we are courageous and we are risk-taking and we tell people about Jesus and we ask them to come to church and we let them know, hey, Easter's coming. If you are ever looking for a reason to have somebody come and join you and be with you at church, surely it would be this Easter. And my question, my challenge to you is, thinking in light of what we learn from the story of the Titanic, is if it really is the responsibility of those that are saved to always reach out to help those that are drowning, as a church, can we make sure that we always continuously do the same? Because I don't want you to miss the point of our fellowship of Christ. I don't want you to miss the point of the real reason why we exist as a local church. I don't want you to miss the point and think that this is what it's all about, because the reality is we're building this for those that are still yet to come. So Lighthouse, will you show your fellowship of Jesus Christ by being bold and being brave and being courageous and knowing that you're here for a reason and a purpose that has been preordained in time by God Almighty? And will you bring, invite, include, and introduce your world to Jesus? Because you don't know what could happen on the other side of your invite. How many more Lisas can be here at Lighthouse Church the next few weeks? How many more Lisas can be in your small groups, can be in your life group, if people, ordinary, normal, just 9 to 5, nothing special about them, people like me and you, chose to be emboldened and brave, and we're willing to trust God that if we follow His word, then He'll come through for us by just inviting people to come and be a part of this thing that is life-giving to our souls. So Lighthouse Church, I task you with some homework. And my request is this: get planning and scheming and praying. Who can you bring this Easter? Who is on the other side of your invitation?